You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Saudagar.
What I'd like to discuss in our remembrance of Imam al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi briefly is a matter that I think applies to us today. Imam al-Baqir has been given that title, otherwise his name is Muhammad ibn Ali salamullahi alayhima. His name is Muhammad. His nickname, his laqab, as it is referred to, or the word used in Arabic, which means that this is a name given to him. The meaning of the word is someone who splits, the one who splits the seed of the knowledge after the Prophet, or the seed of the knowledge of prophets. The reason why Imam al-Baqir is known for that is the knowledge of the Holy Prophet, for various reasons, for now close to a century, has been kept from the people. The people were told at one point that in order to make sure the Qur'an is preserved, we must burn all the writings of the sayings of the Prophet. And anyone who kept any writing of the sayings of the Prophet was forced to burn it, or get rid of it, or destroy it one way or another. The narration of hadith was restricted to certain individuals who did not pass on the knowledge of the Prophet, the Sunnah of the Prophet as it was. Fabrications began to emerge. Those who knew the knowledge of the Ahlul Bayt, Ali ibn Abi Talib salamullah alayhi, was put in a position not to be speaking publicly and to share that knowledge. Imam al-Mujtaba similarly, Imam al-Husayn similarly. In different ways, the conditions that they were in, there wasn't much that could be said. The Imams did share their knowledge in different ways, of course, that when we discuss those Imams and their struggle and their plans and how they conducted themselves as the Imams of the Ummah during their time. And Imam Zain al-Abidin was in a very critical time as well. But the reason why Imam al-Baqir is given that title is because on a more public scale, the Imam is now sharing the knowledge of the Prophet and the Prophets on a more public scale.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره. همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام من هوان الدنيا على الله أنه لا يعصى إلا فيها ولا ينال ما عنده إلا بتركها.
Imam Ali said, "It is the proof of the humbleness of the world before Allah that Allah is disobeyed only herein, and His favors cannot be achieved except by abandoning it." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we find in the very words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and we realize from the very words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, that he was a very beautiful, eloquent speaker and writer. We can see this very clearly in the book Nahjul Balagha, The Peak of Eloquence, which is a compilation of Imam Ali's sermons, his letters, and his short statements. Truly, we witness the beauty of the speech and the speaking ability and the writing ability and the eloquence of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and as it is referred to in Arabic as fasaha and balagha. And so we find in sermon number 203 in Nahjul Balagha that Imam Ali alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, says, "When a man dies, people ask what property he has left behind. while the angels ask what good deeds he has sent forward. May Allah bless you. Send forward something, for it will be alone for you. And do not leave everything behind, for that would be a burden upon you. A very beautiful and profound statement. And of course, when each of us will die, people will ask what was left behind as inheritance, or what was left behind by so and so. But the angels who are waiting for us on the other side, waiting for us after the gate of death is crossed, those angels will ask us, what good deeds have you sent forward? So the property that was left behind will not be of any use, unless, of course, it is given away on the path of Allah. But what will be of use, and indeed of great use, is what we have sent forward. Imam Ali says, may Allah bless you, send forward something, send good deeds forward. Whatever you have done in this life, which was for the sake of Allah, and it was on the path of Allah, that is what will be counted. That is what will be waiting for you, as if you have given out a loan, and it will come back to you. It is what we do in our lives, brothers and sisters, dear friends. It is what we do in our lives for the sake of Allah. In this temporary world, this world of trial, it is these good deeds which we will see in the hereafter, in the akhirah. And so as Imam Ali says, do not leave everything behind, because that would only be a burden upon you. For that which is left behind in this temporary world will be temporary, and it will be destroyed, and it will be vain. But that which we send forward will be saved for an eternity, where we too are to live for eternity. A profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Kull subhan wa kull ashrabayya tabka ayni bidam'i mushtabayya أسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection on the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يديه يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعرف المجرمون بسيماهم فيؤخذ بالنواصي والأقدام.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks. So they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. Ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan al-ayn rajim. Bismillahi rahman rahim. In this program, I would like to talk about Amir al-Mu'mineen, not that much from the historical point of view, but I would like to share with you some of his words about himself in Nahj al-Balagha. Ali, in the words of Ali. There is a khutbah in Nahj al-Balagha, khutbah number 3. Very powerful, very sensitive, where he actually lays down the reason why he has accepted this and what is his mandate. That's where he says that, you know, I knew this was my right from day one, but I was deprived. And after 25 years, people came back to him. And there he says, I have only accepted it because unlike the case of Saqifa, now I have the support of the people. So I don't have an excuse on the day of Qiyamah to say to Allah that, oh, people were not there with me. And number two, he says, because Allah has taken a pledge on people like me that I'm not allowed to be indifferent when I see the ummah divided between the oppressors and the oppressed. He went right in the beginning where he says, أَمَّا وَاللَّهِ لَقَدْ تَقَمَّصَهَا إِبْنَ أَبِي قَحَافَ وَإِنَّهُ إِلَّا يَعْلَمُ أَنَّ مَحَلِّ مِنْهَا مَحَلَّ الْقُطُبِ مِنَ الرَّحَى. He uses the word taqammasa. Taqammasa is from qamis. Taqammasa means to put on the shirt. It's a verb form here now. And so Amir al-Mu'mineen says that by Allah, Ibn Abi Qahafa, referring to the first Khalifa, لَقَدْ تَقَمَّسَهَا. He put on the shirt of Khilafat while he knew it didn't fit him. It didn't fit those who were before. And the way Khilafat fits to him, he describes, he says, he knew, while he knew that my position to Khilafat is the position of the axis in relation to the handmill. The problem is, you know, this generation doesn't know what is a handmill. They have grinders at home, you know, all electrical. But just about 50 years ago, if people wanted to grind things, they would have this handmill at home. And this is how you get flour and other things. But for those two stones to work together, you needed a pole in the middle. And the stone at the top will have a hole in there, which you will fix on it, and then you will be able to move the stone on the top over the bottom. Otherwise, they will not really go together. It will not work properly. It will fall off. And this is what Amir al-Mu'mineen says. If you look at Khilafat, if that handmill is the Khilafat, that pole in between, that's the Qutb. And that's me. The system of leadership and Khilafat of Islam, he says, I am there, in middle there. If you don't have it that, the system will not work properly. And this is where he says, and then, you know, after describing that, I am the central part of the system of Khilafat. Without me, it will not work.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
In the limelight.
Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the top House Republican, recently took to social media to warn that Democrats have hatched a dastardly plot. Democrats, he said, want to track every penny you earn so they can then tax you and your family at the maximum possible amount. The article you're about to hear has been published by the New York Times opinion section. The article has been written by Benjamin Applebaum, the lead writer on economics and business for the New York Times editorial board. The piece is titled, The Rotten Core of the Republican Party. Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the top House Republican, recently took to social media to warn that Democrats have hatched a dastardly plot. Democrats, he said, want to track every penny you earn so they can tax you and your family at the maximum possible amount. Well, yes, Democrats want Americans to pay the full amount they owe in taxes. What doesn't get enough attention is that many Republicans seem not to agree. Resistance to taxation is the rotten core of the modern Republican Party. Republicans in recent decades have sharply reduced the federal income tax rates imposed on wealthy people and big companies. But their opposition to taxation goes beyond that. They are actively aiding and abetting tax evasion. Republicans have hacked away at funding for the Inland Revenue Service, the IRS, over the past decade, enfeebling the agency. When the rich and powerful open loopholes in the tax code, Republicans reliably fight to keep the loopholes open. Indeed, they valorize Americans who find ways to pay less, a normalization of antisocial behavior that may be even more damaging than their efforts at bureaucratic sabotage. Former President Donald Trump's loud and proud declaration that paying very little in taxes makes me smart was just a more brazen articulation of what has become party orthodoxy. The Democratic proposal targeted by Kevin McCarthy in the video he posted online, he actually calls it un-American, would make it harder for wealthy people to cheat on their taxes. The Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, estimated in 2019 that Americans conceal from taxation more than half of income that is not subject to some form of third-party verification, like a W-2. the form that the government uses to verify ordinary wage income. This blind spot costs the federal government hundreds of billions of dollars in unpaid taxes. In comparison, more than 95% of wage income is reported. Under the current version of the Democrats' plan, which is part of the Biden administration's sweeping Build Back Better legislation, banks would be required to submit annual reports on accounts with total inflows and outflows exceeding $10,000, excluding paychecks and government benefits. The banks would report the total amount deposited in the account and the total amount withdrawn. There would be no reporting of individual transactions. The information would give the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, a better chance to catch cheaters, and it would provide a salutary reminder for people to pay what they owe. The Biden administration recently cemented an international agreement to establish a 15% global minimum tax on corporate income. The long-sought deal would reduce the incentive for American firms to evade taxation by pretending to generate revenue in low-tax havens like Ireland and roughly half of the islands in the Caribbean, a practice that has become all but business as usual in industries with intangible products like finance, technology, and pharmaceutical research. The minimum corporate tax, like the bank reporting requirement, is not aimed at increasing what is owed. It is aimed at collecting what is owed already. Improving tax collection was another important benefit. Democracy and capitalism rest on a lacework of mutual obligation. People fulfill their own responsibilities because they're confident others will too. Collecting taxes, especially from the rich and powerful, is an affirmation of that faith. Felicia Wong, the president of the Roosevelt Institute, a progressive think tank based in New York, said that the corporate tax agreement, which includes 136 countries, is valuable as a demonstration that governments have the ability to impose their will on multinational corporations in the service of the public interest. A hopeful model for confronting other problems like climate change. It can and should create more faith in governance, she said. Both plans, however, must overcome the united opposition of congressional Republicans. The Republican Party was reborn in the 1970s under the banner of resistance to taxation, led by anti-tax men like Jack Kemp and Ronald Reagan. It remains the party's fixation, the one major area of policy on which congressional Republicans were able to agree upon during the Trump administration. By way of ideological justification, Republicans like to talk about liberty, by which they mean a narrow and negative kind of freedom from civic duty and mutual obligation. But the fervent opposition to taxation has always found its deeper wellsprings of motivation in concern about how the money will be spent. In the bellwether case of California, the rise of anti-tax activism was inextricably intertwined with the decline of a white electoral majority. It wasn't a question of whether Americans should ever be required to help one another. The real question was, who would be helped? Opposition to progressive income taxation also draws strength from an imagined democratic ideal in which the people who vote for taxation, pay the taxes, and get the benefits are all one and the same. History tells a very different story, though. From the outset, taxation in the United States was designed as an antidote to inequality. The government initially chose to raise revenue through tariffs, collecting from wealthy merchants. The introduction of a federal income tax in the early 20th century was a different means to the same end. In a historical analysis published last year, a pair of German political scientists, Laura Zielkopf and Hannah Lisa showed that progressive taxation is a hallmark of democratic governance. Political philosophers have long fretted that democracy allows the poor to plunder the rich. Your opposite has proved more nearly true. Progressive taxation is not a threat to the wealthy. It is a small price to pay for prosperity. Cutting taxes to staff social programs is, by itself, a threat to the sustainability of the American experiment in multicultural democracy. In enabling resistance to lawful taxation, Republicans are engaged in an even more direct assault on democracy. Having failed to constrain government spending through the democratic process, they are seeking to undermine government itself. Representative Kevin McCarthy is right to frame a fairly technical change in tax rules as an issue that goes to the heart of American democracy. Democracies impose higher taxes than other forms of government because democracies are communities of common purpose. We create and maintain our society through our contributions. Or we don't, and things fall apart.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Higher Than Favor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Gratitude is more than mere appreciation by tongue. It includes actions that demonstrate appreciation in practical terms, and it involves using each favor in a proper way. Such gratitude for a favor results in blessings and prosperity far greater than that provided by the favor itself. Using the favors for seeking Allah's pleasure and meeting His servant's needs is a capital that earns honor in this world as well as eternal prosperity in the hereafter. While a favor itself may confer only a material blessing. In other words, when one receives a favor, he receives something useful for this world, and if he shows gratitude for it in appropriate ways, he then receives something additional, which is even better. Additional rewards both for this world and the hereafter. Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salam has said, "One who is grateful for a favor derives more prosperity from his gratefulness than from the favor, because favors pertain to life in this world, whereas gratitude is the capital of this world and the other world." So, brothers and sisters, we have to be grateful for all the blessings and all the favors that we receive through whoever it comes. If we are grateful, we benefit more. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing something that is higher than a favor. So let's say somebody extends his helping hand to get you out of some sort of trouble. right? You needed help, you know, just take a very simple example. Let's say you needed some money. Somebody gave you some money, right? Your problem got solved. He did a favor to you. Now, this favor is to your benefit. There's no doubt about it. You benefited from that favor, got out of that trouble, and you now live a very happy life, and you are all satisfied. Now, the question is, can you benefit from this favor to the next level or not? You can ask, how do I benefit from this favor even further? Well, the answer to that is through thankfulness. You know, sometimes we take things for granted. Somebody helped us, we're like, okay, yeah, I mean, you helped me, fine, whatever, and you move on. But there's another time where you're thankful for that help that you have received, for that assistance you have received. And once you're thankful towards that person, you benefit in the hereafter as well, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created the system based on human beings helping each other out and taking care of each other and thanking each other and being thankful towards each other. Somebody who has thanked another human being has in fact thanked Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So as a return of this thank, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala increases in the sustenance of that person, in the blessings that that person is supposed to receive in this world and in the hereafter. So capitalize on the favors you receive from Allah or from His servants, and you benefit more in this world and the hereafter.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions, culture, politics, all produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
September the 2nd, 2021. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. All praises due to God, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master Muhammad and upon his pure household, especially the one remaining with God on earth. You are very welcome, dear brothers, I congratulate all of you for the blessing to be present in the main centers of serving the people. God the Exalted has bestowed on you the blessing to be present in the main centers of serving the country, the nation, and the Islamic Republic. You should appreciate the value of this blessing. I also wish to thank the Islamic Consultative Majlis for having carried out its duties on time. I hope that this will be a good and auspicious beginning for you and the country. Government Week is ornamented with the names of Shahid Rajai and Shahid Bahonar. In other words, it is ornamented with the name and remembrance of martyrdom. God's mercy be upon those two great, outstanding and active men who were blessed with martyrdom. They truly intended to serve.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Although their term of service was short, they showed that they had entered the arena with purity and with the intention of rendering services. They had an Islamic, popular and jihadi mentality. This is a lesson for all existing officials. You, dear brothers, have accepted your responsibility in a difficult time. I hope that God will help you. I too pray, and I hope that you succeed. These are difficult circumstances considering the high rate of inflation, the people's livelihood problems, the issue of coronavirus, and the various other problems that exist. If on the one hand you work in a diligent, untiring, and round-the-clock way, and if you rely on God the Exalted as a reserve and as an investment, you will definitely win and succeed, and you will overcome problems. You should make your intentions divine. And divine intention in this position of yours means having the intention to serve the people. If you enter the field with the genuine intention of serving the people, this is a divine and pure intention, one that will become blessed by God.
In the limelight.
The new report has a stark scientific message for climate change negotiators at COP26, said the head of the World Meteorological Organization. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Andrea Germanes, journalist. This article is published under the heading Humanity Way Off Track. WMO says atmospheric carbon at level unseen in 3 million years. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. carbon dioxide concentrations reached a new record high in 2020, with comparable levels not seen for roughly 3 million years, the United Nations Weather Agency said recently. The findings came in the latest edition of the World Meteorological Organization's Greenhouse Gas Bulletin, released a week before COP26, the UN Climate Summit, kicks off in Glasgow. According to WMO Secretary General Professor Petteri Tallas, the report holds a stark scientific message for climate change negotiators headed to the summit. The bulletin said globally averaged levels of CO2 as well as two other potent greenhouse gases, methane and nitrous oxide, were all up from the previous year. CO2 reached 413.2 parts per million ppm in 2020, 149% of the pre-industrial level. The increase from 2019 levels came despite pandemic-triggered lockdowns, triggering an approximately 5.6% drop in fossil fuel CO2. Methane stood at 262% and nitrous oxide at 123% of pre-industrial levels, the report said. At the current rate of increase in greenhouse gas concentrations, we will see a temperature increase by the end of this century far in excess of the Paris Agreement targets of 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, he said in a statement warning we are way off track. The amount of CO2 in the atmosphere breached the milestone of 400 parts per million in 2015, and just 5 years later, it exceeded 413 ppm, Tallas added. This is more than just a chemical formula and figures on a graph. It has major negative repercussions for our daily lives and well-being, for the state of our planet, and for the future of our children and grandchildren, he added. Tallas said carbon dioxide remains in the atmosphere for centuries and in the ocean for even longer. Last time the Earth experienced a comparable concentration of CO2 was 3 to 5 million years ago, when the temperature was 2 to 3 degrees Celsius warmer and sea level was 10 to 20 meters higher than now. The report also warned that land and ocean's ability to continue serving as carbon sinks, sucking up about half of CO2 emissions, could be negatively affected by climate crisis-related changes such as wildfires. Urging countries to turn commitment into action, Tallas said, there is no time to lose. Dave Rhee, a professor at the University of Edinburgh and director of the Edinburgh Climate Change Institute, also tied the bulletin's findings to the upcoming UN Climate Summit. He said in the statement, "The true success or failure of COP26 will be written in our skies in the form of greenhouse gas concentrations." This is a new report from WMO, which provides a brutally frank assessment of what's been written there to date. He said, so far, it's an epic fail. Will this 26th COP find success where the previous 25 have fallen short? Our atmosphere will bear witness.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Iran is a land of ethnic diversity, and that is reflected in different languages, cultures, and of course, music. After over a one-year hiatus due to the coronavirus, the Iranian Folk Music Festival has once again hosted musicians from across Iran, each playing their local tunes using their indigenous instruments.
I come from the northern Khorasan province. I am so happy to be part of this music festival to share my city's music with my fellow Iranians from other cities. I've brought a local instruments such as sona, which is an ancient Iranian woodwind instrument, and dhol, which is a local type of drum.
We in Sistan and Baluchistan province play sitar, which we also call tambure. We also play qaychak, which is a type of bowed lute similar to kamanche. We usually play in celebrations.
Every night during the three-day festival, different local ensembles took to the stage to perform, so the audience could listen to Kurdish, Baluchi, Azeri, and Arabic tunes in a matter of a few hours. And this is my favorite part. On the sidelines of the festival, bands from different ethnicities get together and improvise. This is where music transcends languages and interconnects various cultures.
Music is a language that needs no translation. We may not understand each other's languages, but as you could see, different people are interacting peacefully through music.
It's so interesting to see artists from different parts of the country perform together. This is the true meaning of national unity that binds us despite our cultural differences.
Organizers say that's the main purpose of holding such an event, to unite different ethnicities through the language of music.
Music is an integral part of society's identity and history, and Iran is no exception. So the festival tries to both introduce the local music of different ethnic groups in Iran while establishing peace and friendship among them.
Organizers also hope that the festival would help revive Iran's folk music, which has long been overshadowed by some of the heavily invested genres, like pop.
Through music, it's easier to grasp the ethnic diversity in Iran, because music itself is a language, a universal language that speaks the beauty of differences and peaceful coexistence of different cultures as one nation. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Kerman.
The sanctions by the United Nations Security Council against North Korea over its nuclear and missile programs have been in place for more than a decade. The UN now acknowledges that the U.S.-backed sanctions were at least partly responsible for North Korea's food and medicine shortages.
DPR Korea has never been more isolated from the international community than at this point in time. This is having a dramatic impact on the human rights of the people inside of the country and dampens hopes of achieving sustainable peace and security on the Korean Peninsula.
The special rapporteur was echoing and backed the call by some member states for sanctions relief for North Korea.
There must be a move back towards the spirit of multilateral cooperation that enabled the foundation of the United Nations in the first place.
This weekend, the South Korean and U.S. envoys on North Korea met in Seoul, with South Korea calling for an official declaration to end the 1950-53 Korean War, and the U.S. agreeing to discuss the proposal later. The U.S. has often repeated that it's willing to meet with North Korea anywhere, anytime, without preconditions. U.S. officials have now added that the country holds no hostile intent toward North Korea, while at the same time pressing for stronger implementation of the controversial United Nations Security Council sanctions. South Koreans expressed their hope the international community could at least provide humanitarian aid.
The United Nations need to support North Koreans so that they don't continue to suffer from starvation.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in has sought to build peace with North Korea, arranging summits and proposing other avenues of engagement, while the U.S. maintained a hard line. President Moon will leave office next spring. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A Yemeni human rights group called the Eye of Humanity Center for Rights and Development has released a report on casualties caused by 6 years of Saudi-led war on Yemen. The report says more than 44,000 civilians have been killed or injured since 2015, when Riyadh launched an aggression against Sana'a. Thousands of women and children are among the victims, according to the report.
We released a report on the casualties of the Yemen war during the past 2,400 days of the conflict. 44,221 civilians were killed or injured, targeted by airstrikes and cluster bombs. More than 4,000 children and 2,800 women are among the victims who lost their lives.
Also, hundreds have been left with permanent disabilities, the report says. Thousands of civilian facilities were also targeted by the Saudi-led coalition's warplanes. Hospitals, schools, and power stations were bombed across Yemen, affecting lives of millions of Yemenis in a country already hit hard by poverty.
The Saudi-led coalition has deliberately targeted civilian facilities to kill civilians. It did not differentiate between civilian and military targets. The coalition has violated international laws that ban military attacks on civilian facilities.
However, infrastructure are not the only civilian targets hit by Saudi and coalition warplanes. According to the report, more than 500,000 homes have been destroyed during the war. As a result, millions of Yemenis have been displaced across the country.
The ongoing Saudi war and the blockade imposed on Yemen is killing more Yemenis, as it has deprived millions of civilians, including children, of their basic needs, such as food and medicine. However, the international community remains silent regardless of the situation in Yemen, which the United Nations describes as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Human rights organizations warn that the long-term Israeli blockade has led to deterioration of water crisis in Gaza, making the enclave's water undrinkable. The organizations also said the crisis has led to poisoning of the residents of the besieged enclave. The situation was exacerbated by an acute electricity crisis that hampered the operation of water wells and sewage treatment plants, leading about 80% of Gaza's untreated sewage to be discharged into the sea, while 20% seeps into underground water.
We suffer from shortage of water. Sometimes we are without water for weeks. Meanwhile, the available water is very salty, polluted, and unfit for daily uses, especially in the refugee camps. Palestinians here are forced to buy mineral water for drinking, but only a few of them can afford having it.
Israel's attacks on Gaza last May have doubled the crisis, as the attacks pounded the enclave's already crumbling infrastructure. This presents a serious threat to the Gaza population's health, where recent data indicates that about a quarter of the diseases spread in Gaza are caused by water pollution, and a great number of deaths of young children and infants are linked to intestinal diseases related to polluted water.
Many children and elderly people are suffering from serious diseases due to the polluted water. Most of the families here go to hospitals on a weekly basis as they have kidney problems. We call on the international